Welcome to the Burning the Ship podcast. I'm your host, Jason Seward, and this is the show where we talk to folks from all walks of life who share one thing in common, and that is they're all in on something that they're passionate about. And the fortunate thing for me, that covers a wide range of folks, so I get to talk to a lot of interesting people, and today I have one of those. Today I have my good buddy, Joe Roppe, and I met Joe through a mastermind group that we're in. It's called the Dad Edge, and it's a couple different levels of that mastermind group, but Joe and I both are in like the business owner portion of it, and it's a smaller group where we get together and just talk about things that men are dealing with, right, in business and family and personal lives, mindset, all that stuff, and we just motivate each other and help each other get through challenges, celebrate wins, and stuff like that. So I've gotten to know Joe very well through that over the last 6 months or so. And I decided, as I've gotten to know him better, I realized, his mindset is very similar to mine in a lot of ways. And he's so humble that in the last 6 months getting to know him, I knew very little about his business, but he's got a super successful business, and he'll get into all that within the episode. But I just knew I wanted to get him on here because he's got six kids, he and his wife. They're a blended family, but he treats every kid as if they're his child, and he talks about that because they are his children. And he is very passionate about designing a life that is conducive to or caters to him being as present and as good of a father and husband as he can be. And I mean, I talk about that a lot on here. That's my main priority. So he's so humble. I've got to, and you'll see in the interview, I've got to kind of fish to get him to talk about himself, because this is not something comfortable for him. I get some guests on here that are constantly in front of a camera, and they are comfortable in these types of environments. And it's not that Joe wasn't uncomfortable, he's just so humble in what he does. He's just head down doing his thing, that he doesn't do things like this very much. So but I love that. I love that as the host, to get to really poke and prod and try to get people to open up and talk about what's most important to them. Before we get going, like I do every week, I'm gonna share JJ's joke of the week. JJ is my 8-year-old son. If y'all have been listening the last several weeks, a couple months ago, I interviewed my daughter, Emma, on the podcast. She's 13, and he was a little jealous that he didn't get interviewed, and I'll do that eventually with him as well, but he's 8, he's full of energy, and it's hard to sit him down still to have an interview for 30, 45 minutes. So he asked if he could give me a joke every week that I say on the podcast, and I said, absolutely. I will preface this joke with, he claims that he's making these up, and I do not believe him. I'm not calling my son a liar, but he may think that he's making them up, and making them up in his mind is getting them out of some book or going on YouTube or something to find them. So, but with that, here is JJ's joke of the week. What is blue and doesn't weigh very much? Light blue. And that's JJ's joke of the week. So, without further ado, we will hop into today's episode with Joe Roppe. I know you guys will enjoy it. And once you've gotten through it and listened, I'm wide open to any feedback you have, because I love getting folks on here that most listeners probably know nothing about, never heard of, or anything like that. This is just a humble individual from living in the Midwest, running a very, very successful business, and running a very, very loving and caring family. So with that, let's get started. Joe Roppe, welcome to Burning the Ships, my man.
I'm happy to be here. I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, man. I'm excited, Joe. I've gotten to know you over the last, 6 months or so through a group that we're in, the Dad Edge, and with Larry Hagner and his team. And, you know, I've yet to meet you in person because, you know, we did an in-person event, but you weren't able to attend that. So I get to see you every week on these calls we have on there. And I've gotten to kind of know the man you are now, the dad, the husband, the businessman, all that. So I've really, in a short period of time, grown a lot of respect for who you are. And I'll get into that because it's rare that you come across people that, like, every time I talk to you or I hear you talk to other people, you never lead with talking about yourself. You're always inquisitive. You're always caring. You care about everybody you talk to. You give them your full attention and all that. And I would imagine, I just see it in little doses, but I would imagine that's who you are as a human. And those types of humans are people I want to be associated with. So, but I know it's more to it, to your story, than just who you are today. And I kind of want to bring you on here and kind of walk through your story, how you've built an incredible business, an incredible team, and how you continue to grow and scale everything there. So with that, to get things started, I'll turn it over to you, Joe, to kind of, at a high level, introduce yourself in any way you want and tell folks who you are, and then I'll have a pile of questions on the heels of that.
Yeah, you bet. You bet. I appreciate that intro. My name's Joe Roppe. I live in northern Wisconsin. Me and my wife, Caitlin Roppe, we have 6 children. I have a fiber optics business. We do underground construction. We do in-home installation. And we work all over the country. We're nationwide. But we're avid hunters. We love having our kids in the outdoors. And it just, that's part of our life and our lifestyle.
Yeah. And I think that's probably initially, before I knew anything about you, that was the thing that drew me to you the most, is every time you hop on these calls, you got the big deer in the background wearing the Sitka gear. And I'm like, all right, I can jive with this. And because you share a lot of those. And it was fun during this past hunting season, texting back and forth with, you know, with you, pictures of our kids' deer and stuff like that. So I love that. And I love that you keep that, or make that, a big focus of what y'all are doing. You mentioned your business, you know, and I'm going to encourage you to, you know, let's dive into this and let's talk. I know you want to be humble, but you've grown from scratch a very successful business. So why don't we, I'm going to get into Joe Roppe as the man in a minute, but let's talk about your business a little bit and get that out of the way. So what is it exactly that you do, and how have you been able to scale it to where you are?
Yeah. So I come from a construction background. Me and my dad had a building business, built my first house by myself when I was 21. And, you know, just over the course of that, hard work was something that I think I specialized in. I didn't sacrifice. I would sacrifice hanging out with my friends, hanging out, you know, doing the party and doing this to go work on weekends. It was just a priority to me. In my success, I didn't know what direction I was going in life. I just knew if I worked hard, something would happen. And I don't have a college education. But I was always really good at treating people good, building relationships. And so when my building career, when the stock market fell in 2008-ish, yep, my dad was coming to the end of his career and I was ready for a change. I loved the building industry. I mean, I could do any part of it. But I just wanted more for myself. I wanted a different life. And I had this opportunity to go work for a company that did fiber optic installs. And this was when fiber was just kind of hitting the ground a little bit. And that was back in 2011. I went to work for them for about a year. And I've always worked for myself. I've always been a big thinker. I've always been very confident in what I can do as a person. And so I worked for them for about a year. And then I went on my own. And it's like any other business. You know, you got to go out, you got to build the relationships, you got to build the trust. You have to, get your feet on the ground and do the work is really what it is. And it took me 2 or 3 years to get where I had consistent work. But after that, I built a team underneath me. You know, and my dad worked for me for a while. He got out of construction, came to work for me, and he loved it because the stress was gone. He could show up, do his job,
go ahead,
and be done at the end of the day.
Right.
And I love that I could offer that to him because, you know, he showed me so much through life as far as the building goes. And, you know, I still do all of our own building. We're doing an addition on our house and I'm doing it myself, you know, so it's something I have a true passion for. But it turned into something. I always had a vision of what I wanted it to be. And I think just over the course of the grind and not quitting and, you know, hearing people say, you know, that's not something that you're going to be able to do, or, you know, how's that going for you? When I'd be home for a couple of months because I didn't have work. Well, it's going pretty good for me now. Let's put it that way.
Right.
And I think the biggest thing that has gotten me where I'm at today, and I truly believe in this, is it's my communication and my relationship with my people. And I think them feeling like they're part of my family, my team, has really been a huge part of success in my life. I have really good people. I couldn't do what I do without the people that I have. And I think it's just, you know, giving yourself and giving back to people and being someone that is there to help somebody achieve something in their life. It comes back to me full circle. So if I can give somebody an opportunity and help them get from making, you know, 30,000 a year to 100-some thousand a year and change their lives like that, it's been very rewarding for me. And I've seen it throughout my leadership team. You know, I've got some guys that have been with me almost 10 years and their lives are completely different than they were. They're and their family to me.
When you started, I'm jotting down questions as you go, but when you started the business in 2011, were you doing most of your work local, or was this like a traveling service where you were available anywhere? I know you're nationwide now, but when you started, how was it structured?
So when I started my business, it was, I was flat broke. I couldn't get my own credit card. I started my business on my girlfriend's credit card because I didn't have a credit card to travel. And my work was out of state. So I'd drive to Kansas and I was there for a month at a crack. And then I'd be back, you know, for a week or a weekend or something. So nothing was ever local until recently. It was always, I was on the road all the time, you know, building relationships. You know, whether it was a week long, 2 weeks long, just to get my foot in the door somewhere.
And during that time, you physically had to be there. Like, I know now you've set it up a lot different as you've scaled, but so you were growing this business. You said your girlfriend at the time, did you have children at the time?
Nope.
No. Okay. Gotcha. So you did have a little bit of flexibility, I guess, when it came to that. Let me go back, because I made up a question about this because you hit on a quick point, but I think it's important. You talked about how at an early age you had, like, you've only worked for yourself or with your dad, but you had that confidence to know that, like, you were going to be okay no matter where you went. You were just going to go after it. So that confidence, you know, a lot of people have great ideas and big ideas, and you mentioned that you were one of those big thinkers, but that goes nowhere without the confidence that you can actually pull things off. So where does that confidence come from? Like, is that something ingrained in you from your dad? Was that confidence on the heels of being successful at a lot of things you've done in life or at an early age? I'm curious where that comes from.
That's a fantastic question, actually. And I firmly believe, you know, we grew up and we were pretty poor. My parents were both alcoholics. My dad, he was not a present father. My confidence 100% comes from the sports that I played and the coaches I had
Okay.
along the way. the support I had from my coaches was, it was more like a father figure to me that was missing in my life. You know, my dad was there, but he wasn't present when it comes, like me and you are with our kids.
Yeah.
It wasn't, there was nothing close to that. So 100% sports and athletics changed my life, and the accountability that I was held to, and how, where I wanted to be, you know, on my team was, you know, I wanted to be one of the better players. So I had to work hard. So it was something that I've just done because I knew that's what I had to do to be the best I could be.
Right. Yeah. I think you're hitting on a good point because I feel the same way. I wasn't an exceptional athlete by any means, you know, I played several different sports. I was never the best player, but I always had this mentality of like, if I'm the hardest worker out there, I'm going to get some attention and some opportunities. Right. And so for me, that's where that confidence came to your point earlier, where you've always been a hard worker and you knew that if you work hard, opportunities will come. Well, that I have that same mentality. It was just like you. That was the foundation of that was built early. I mean, back to when I was like 8, 9, 10 years old playing sports, you know, little rec league sports and stuff like that. I wanted that reputation, and that came from my mother ingraining that in me. Like, I don't care how good you are, if you're sitting the bench, whatever the case is, you're going to be the hardest worker on the team. And that, I think, for me as a dad now, and I know you feel the same way, like, it's so important to me to keep my kids involved with those types of activities so they can feel that same or build that same confidence and that same, you know, because it's paying dividends for us, you know. So I love that you hit on that.
Yeah. I think it's a huge part, and you don't really realize it until you're, you know, where I'm at today. And I look back, and there's one thing that I'm going to share that really was a huge honor of mine. So my high school basketball coach was inducted into the Wisconsin Coaches Hall of Fame. And he's coached for, I think, 35-ish years. Well, he picked me out of all the kids to be the one that spoke at,
that's amazing.
Him his award there. Yeah. So I was very honored with that. We've always had a really good relationship, and he was the one that was kind of my dad throughout my childhood.
That's awesome.
Going back to that, you know, I preach to my kids, and they, you know, I got boys and they want to be college football players, you know, like we all did. And I'm like, it just, you're no different than any other kid out there. Yeah. But the one thing that separates them kids is the work ethic, and they do something different that other kids won't do.
Yep.
So if you want to be that kid that plays on Saturdays, I said, we got to get up at 5 a.m. We got to work out, and we got to do things that other kids don't do.
Right.
And I'll be right there next to you doing it.
Yep. Yeah. I heard, this has been a couple months back, but I heard Dana White, who, you know, runs the UFC, in an interview, and he talked about kids today, that the culture has shifted so much. And I'm going to sound like an old guy on the porch saying this, but like, kids today, it's a little bit different than when we grew up, right? Just the overall culture. But he was talking about kids today, a 10-year-old today, that can learn at an early age that all I got to do is work a little bit harder than everybody else is infinitely more positioning themselves more in a better situation to dominate everything they ever do, because that work ethic is not, you know, encouraged and instilled. And a lot of our, and I'm going on a tangent here, but kids are coddled and, you know, things like that. So to your point, like, a lot of your success comes from having that mentality of, I just got to work hard, and I'm going to work harder than everybody else. And at the end of that, something good's going to come out of it if I sustain it long enough. So I think it's a point. And I'm going to get to this point now, because I think it's, as you can see, I kind of bounce all over the place. So just
bear. You're right, man. You're right.
But you made me think of something with this. So you mentioned your parents both being alcoholics, not very present, your dad not very present. No question, that, because I know it's the same for me, that built something in you, right? Good, bad, whatever it is, but that built something in you, maybe a chip on your shoulder, maybe I'm not going to be that person, or whatever the case may be. But there's no question there's a direct correlation to the success you're having as a man now, to the trials and tribulations you went through as a child, not having your dad and mom, and just not having stability there. I had a similar situation. You know, my dad in and out of jail, and my mom, single mom, we didn't have any money, all that stuff. Well, that's a chip on my shoulder. It is the fire in me to do all the things that I didn't have, right, for my kids. So now you and I both have young kids. We're raising them in about as perfect of environments as they can be raised in, right? They're not dealing with any adversity other than whatever comes to them through school and sports, but they're not having these same, I guess, stresses that built so much good in us. So how do you wrestle with that, knowing that your children are not facing the adversity that built the man that you are? You know, how do you cultivate that and maybe curate some of that for your kids?
I think it really comes with the confidence you instill in your kids. I really think it comes with the love that we give our kids. It comes with the experiences we give them. It comes with the hardships that they see that we go through. You know, when I walk in the door someday after a hard day, you know, my son sees it right away. You know, are you okay? Are you mad? I'm like, no, buddy, dude, it was just a really hard day. And then, like, I'll talk to him about it.
Right.
And I'll be like, hey, life's not always this. I said, life is behind closed doors. It's really hard sometimes, man. And sometimes you go, you know, you have really good days and you have really tough days. But those are the days that build us into who we are today. You know what I mean? So as we go, as my kids experience hard things, I try to sit down and communicate with them. Like, you know, life isn't always easy. Like, you're going to have hard days. And for us, we have to be confident in ourselves. We have to tell ourselves, you know, this isn't just a bad day and we're going to get through it. And, I'm a good kid. You know, I could do this. And, you know, that's what I really try to teach my kids is just back in the day, I remember I was just so hard on myself. I was so hard on myself to be perfect. And I see it sometimes in my boys. And the other day, they're in flag football league now, indoor. And the other day, you know, my 9-year-old, if he drops a ball, if he does something, he just, you know, puts his hands. I said, hey, let's set a goal. I said, from moving forward, if something happens where you make a mistake like everybody does and you drop a ball or you miss a flag or something, I said, you get up and you go right back to that huddle and you do better next time. I said, That's just what we do, man. Like, let's not be hard on ourselves. You work hard. Just know that, you know, the people make mistakes and it's okay. You know, give yourself some grace and do, you know, get the next one.
Right.
You know, so I think it's just things like that. But that support, just being there for them, it's huge. It is so huge.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've probably, like yourself, I've been, especially the last few years, very intentional about designing things where I can be. I mean, I probably go too far in that direction. I don't think there is too far, but I want to be involved with everything, not just involved, like contributing to everything. I want to coach. I want to do all these things with my kids. You talk about like them getting upset with their performances. My son at a wrestling tournament this past weekend, one kid on another team, he's lost to him, I think, 3 times this year already. And the kid's thrown him around pretty good. Well, in his mind, he stepped on the mat just thinking he lost, right? Like, this kid keeps beating me. And so you could just see it in his face. He was, like, a little timid. Well, he got in the match and started doing good. And by the end of the match, they do 3 1-minute periods, I think. He won 17-2 on points, like, demolished the kid. Did really good. In his mind, he still thought he had lost. So he's crying, like bawling, crying. And the ref raises his hand, you know, and he looks at the score. He's like, oh, okay. You know, so the point there is, in his mind, right, he had already lost. So the whole time he didn't have that confidence or whatever. And then he got a little taste of it when he realized he won. But win or lose, and if that kid had beat him 5, 10, 20 more times, and he might, that's okay. I'm fine with that. Like, and I want him to know that I tell him this all the time, I am more proud of you with when you handle losing gracefully with your head held high, you shake the opponent's hand, shake the other coach's hand, and you walk off ready to go. I'm more proud of that than any win you'll ever have. And that sounds like you kind of approach it the same way. So, yeah.
And I think life is filled with losses.
Yep.
You know, that's why if you got to get through the losses to get to the wins, you know what I mean? And I think any professional athlete, I mean, look at Michael Jordan, you know, you see the stats, how many missed, you know, last second shots that he had.
Right.
A lot.
Yeah.
But he's also had some wins. So, but getting your kids to understand that is something that is hard, because as a kid, I was the same way, man. I did not like to lose. I still don't like to lose.
Yeah.
But the way you handle it is what shows what kind of champion you are.
Right.
I feel, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. And I think, you know, and I could talk about kids all day long because it's the thing I'm most passionate about. But I think you're going back to like the initial thought I brought up of just, I think it's okay for us as parents to, like, in a responsible way, but curate adversity for them, right? Like, to make them have to experience uncomfortable situations. And the best way to do that in a controlled environment is sports, whether it's football, wrestling, jiu-jitsu, baseball, swimming, all those things can be hard, right? And but the key there is you can't just put them in there and then expect them to learn how to deal with adversity if you're going to rescue them every time there's adversity, right? Just let them deal with it, and don't make excuses for them. Don't blame the ref for a bad call. Just say, nope, that's what it is. Let's pick it up. Let's go. And, every kid, if they're involved with those things, it doesn't have to be athletics. It could be anything that just requires discipline, consistency to get better. It could be playing a musical instrument, but it's all hard. And we as parents got to let them experience that and not fix it every time for them, right?
Yep.
And kids have, 18 years with us to experience that curated adversity to then become good adults. And it's on us to kind of facilitate that, I think.
Yep.
So,
And, you know, that's where being a parent sometimes is just really hard.
Right.
Because your heart is like, you want to go fix it. But then you, in your mind, you're like, that's not what's best for him. You know, what's best for him is to feel this and to deal with it a little bit. And then, you know, make them hold themselves accountable.
Yep.
You know, that's really what it is. You know, you guys lost and your team, you lost as a team. And that's what it is. And now you come back and you fix those things. You do better next time.
Yeah. I used to get on JJ, my son. He's 8 now. But, I mean, even in T-ball, when he's 5 or 6, when he would fail at something, and he still does to this day, he'll get real emotional. He'll cry. And he gets over it now pretty quickly. But I used to get on him about it. Like, dude, we're not here to cry. Why are you crying? Like, that was my response. And then I had actually one of my best friends who's also coaches his kids said to me one time, and we have a relationship where he can be blunt with me. He's like, man, I'll take the kid that cries when they fail all day long over the kid that doesn't show any emotion because they care. And you can work with somebody that cares, you know, and that gave me a different perspective. So now when he cries, I let him do it. I encourage it, get it out, and let's move on and get through it. And I completely did a 180 on my philosophy there. I had that like no crying in baseball mentality, you know, and I'm glad I don't anymore. So,
yeah.
So Joe, let's talk about, you mentioned, you know, you took us when you started the business 2011, no kids, you're traveling all over the country to do these jobs. Obviously, where you're at now, at some point it started picking up steam. And while it's picking up steam, you mentioned now you and your wife together have 6 kids. So that adds a lot of variables to the picture here. So kind of walk us through at any pace you want or whatever steps you want to share, but where it goes from there, from the point where you're using girlfriend's credit card to fund travel expenses to now building a family around this business that's also building.
Yeah. You know, that goes back to life's filled with challenges, and we go through those seasons. And, you know, we parted our ways. And my wife at the time, she was married. And so when we met, I brought a daughter into the marriage, and she brought a daughter and two sons into our marriage. And then we have two young boys together. But in my heart, they're all my kids.
Yep.
You know, there's not even a thought in my mind that separates my children.
Love.
But yeah, so it got to a point where I was able to build an interior team around me, you know, and we're still building to this day. We just, in our company, we've just done a whole bunch of restructuring and new hiring for new positions that we never had. I feel like small town, you know, I grew up in a town of 400 people. So small town there, it was a very poor community. There wasn't money in our area, but to get my business to where I did, I think came with a little bit of luck, came with the hard work, and it came with the really good people that I had to support me. But then we kind of all got here, and now for the last 2 or 3 years, we've been sitting at this point of, okay, now we're ready to go here. Mm-hmm. And there's some changes that had to be made, and mostly with me understanding how to grow a business from this number to this number, because I've never done it before.
Right.
So it was just really getting people involved to help us structure this and then putting the steps in place to do this. But along the way, I think the biggest thing, you know, is the support I have from my wife. You know, she's my best friend. I've never had support from anybody like I do from her.
Yeah.
And she's, you know, she's my teammate, and we do everything. We do this life together. As hard as it is days with six kids, she's in the hospital now. We got the 1-year-old sick. The 2-year-old had pneumonia last week. So it's just, but it's what it is. It's our life. It's hectic. It's what we do. But without her, I couldn't do what I do. She's definitely my rock, and just having that support and when I'm building this business and knowing that I have her, you know, behind me, and I can lean on her. I can, you know, there's days I come home where I've had a rough day. You know, yeah. you deal with a lot of headaches when you have employees, and you deal with, I don't always make the right decisions, you know, as a business owner. And I didn't always make the right decisions when, you know, getting to where I got. But I learned a lot along the way in those decisions that I made or, you know, that were wrong. And I think owning that has been a really big part of my success and learning that in order to be successful, you have to surround yourself with people that sometimes know more than you
yeah.
and can do different things than you. And I'm okay with that.
Well, it's not just surrounding yourself with those people, but having the wherewithal to delegate important tasks to them without your hands being involved. Like, you gotta not just trust them, but really accept that some things are better without my hands involved in it, right? That's gotta be hard for a prideful business owner, right? I mean, I struggle with it, you know?
Yeah.
So,
but it's true.
Yeah.
It's very true.
How did you... Because, like, now where y'all are now, how many employees do you have in the company at this point?
Right now, we have about 80.
Okay. So, 80. So how, you know, it's kind of cliche, but I hear a lot of entrepreneurs say, like, what got you to a 7-figure business is not what's going to get you to an 8-figure. It's not what's going to get you to a 9-figure and beyond. So, you went starting out, it was just you, and it sounds like a few. You know, other people slowly kind of came into the picture. Did you have mentorship? Did you have coaching? Did you have any guidance building this thing out? Or was it just ready, fire, aim?
Dude, I feel like it was just, we just bulldogged it and we just did what we thought was right.
Right.
And for me, what I always thought was right was just making sure the customer was happy.
Yeah.
Whatever we had to do to make sure the customer was happy, like the word just kept flowing. And I didn't have a mentor. I didn't I hired people in along the way that would that would help me. But it was not honestly until the last year or so where I realized like I need to get some coaching. I need to get some mentors, that can help me get this business to the next level. 'Cause I have a, we have a very successful business here. It's like a rooster that keeps laying golden eggs is what I feel.
Right. Yeah.
But it's like, how long will are they going to lay golden eggs until we make some changes to get, going to the next level? So.
Right. I mean, if you've built it to where it is and you've got that big of a team under you or with you, now you're getting into, to scale, like you're gonna need an HR department, you're gonna need a finance department. Like there it's getting at a bigger level. So kudos to you for one, not being complacent. And I feel like I've heard you talk about this, maybe been in a recent call we were on, but where technically you could kind of settle in and be complacent where you're at now and be just fine. You're making enough income to scratch all the needs and wants you have. The reason you want to grow bigger is to impact more people with your company, right? And not just the customers, but being able to bring those 30,000 a year guys on and get them to six figures and be able to do more of that. And when you're leading with that kind of mentality, you're gonna pull the right levers. Like you're gonna make sure that you are hiring the consultants and the mentors and the coaches to really structure this in a way that can accomplish that goal of helping more people without you having to drive yourself insane, right? Yeah. So where do you envision like the steps that you're making now as far as scaling, is your one of your top priorities to do that with while also not compromising your presence with your family? How do you balance that? Because I mean, it's a tough thing.
That's a good question. And I think, our last conversation, honestly, you said something that has hit home for me. And the question was, what motivates you? And I thought on that for a long time. And it's, it's my family. It's my kids. It's like my biggest motivation is my kids and my wife. And that's that point blank, that's it. And then along with that is motivation to help people, motivation to give an opportunity to somebody that they might not get. Like I don't have a college education, but the people that I hire, I don't need them to have. I've never ever looked to see if they have a college education.
It doesn't matter. I mean, unless you're going to be a doctor or something, but
I want to know if you're going to work hard, if you're coachable, and you want to be a part of a team that has core values that revolve around your family. And that's, that's what I want to know. And I'm not saying we're perfect at all, but there's always steps and learning. And sometimes you drop the ball here and there when you got so much going on. But trying to create a culture for people that come in and make them feel like they're part of something is really important to me.
Yeah, I love that. I recently interviewed John Hewitt, who was the CEO of Jackson Hewitt and Liberty Tax. He's sold both of those companies since, but he made that same point. It basically the way he said it, I love the way he articulated it. He said, "Give me 100 engineers that are smartest people in the world, or give me 100 people with good attitudes that know nothing about what my business is. I'm always taking the good attitudes for you. I can teach them to do the business, what they need to do. So attitude and those core values. I'm glad, and I suspected that you were doing it that way, but I'm glad you are, because that's going to make things just from a culture standpoint a lot better. You have competent people, but if they got shitty attitudes, then it's going to bring everything in the culture down. So, but I want to dig a little bit into what you just said that motivates you. You said your family, your kids, your wife. A lot of people are guilty of like justifying time away from them because they're so motivated by them. And what I mean by that is I have to work 100 hours a week because my motivation being my wife and kids, I've got to set up generational wealth for them and get them all the things they need for the lifestyle we want to live, but I'm not home. But that's okay. I'm sacrificing that because I'm motivated by them. I don't think that's the kind of motivation you're talking about. So dig a little deeper there. Like what do you mean by you're motivated by your wife and kids?
Well, I think it's easy for people to fall asleep in life when it comes to their children, their wife especially. I see it in a lot of my friends, honestly.
Yep.
And then in business as well. But I think the biggest thing for me is I look back and I've read a couple books, and I think this one is The 7 Habits.
Stephen Covey, I think. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. It talks about writing your obituary. And, you know, what are people going to think about you when you're gone? And my motivation really comes with how I want, it comes with my health. It comes with teaching my kid. I can't preach my kids to be healthy if I'm not healthy. I can't preach to my kids that we got to work out. And, you know, if you want to be a strong football player, we got to work out and not me work out. So, you know, my motivation to get up at 5 a.m, hit the gym, eat healthy, and work hard is strictly revolves around what I want my kids to see.
Yep.
And I can't, you know, it's one thing to say something, but if you're not doing it, nobody's going to believe in you. And I think it goes the same way with your kids. And if they see me doing it, they see me working out all the time. They see me shooting my bow. They see me doing these things to be the best I can be at what I want to achieve in life. And for me, I want my kids at the end of the day to say, like, my dad, he showed us this. He showed us how to work hard. He showed us that, you know, if we want longevity, we got to be healthy and we got to take care of our bodies because this is the only body we got.
Yep.
And, you know, that is part of the motivation. And my motivation is not around money. Money's money. It comes and goes. And I don't mean that in any other way than it's just the truth.
It's just a tool. And it's a great tool to have, but it's
absolutely
just a tool. It's just a
it's
tool.
It's given us what we have today.
Right.
But yeah, truly showing my kids what it takes to be a leader and, you know, what the sacrifices that I'm willing to give for them to be able to have things in life as far as just health and opportunity, you know? And I think that's important to me. And I don't want to die with my kids looking over me like I did my dad regretting, I would have been better for them. And I'm going to be the best I can be every day. You know, we're going to have flaws. We're going to make mistakes. We're going to get upset. That's life, but it's just the journey along the way. And they see the steps is really important to me.
I think it's important for them to see us in our worst times too. And talk to them about it. I mean, both of my kids have seen me get frustrated with them and say things that I know I shouldn't say. I've taught them that we shouldn't say. And I just, in a fit of anger because my buttons were all pushed, I lost it and got angry and said, you know, yelled at them or whatever the case may be. But that's not great. But what is great is they saw it and then they watched me own up to it. And they watched me, hey guys, I preach this all the time and I failed and I own it. And that's what life is, because y'all are not going to do everything perfectly and nor am I. You just got to own it and keep moving. And I think that's so important. And I know you do the same, but I talk to my kids constantly about my failures, right? Mm-hmm. The things, and in business, most of them, they don't even understand what I'm talking about. But, you know, they hear me on the phone and they're getting exposure to it. But man, I think you brought up a good point, and it's kind of my leading motivator. Again, I'll say the same thing. It's my wife and kids, but it goes beyond that. For me, it is like I have a very distinct vision in my head of me being 70 years old, 75 years old. Like it's there. And at that age, my kids are both going to be in their 40s, and they're going to have kids that are teenagers probably. And I want to be, now, barring some kind of thing out of my control, I get hit by a bus or I get cancer or something like that, but I want to be physically and mentally capable of doing whatever they want. If they want to take 2 weeks and go to Colorado elk hunting, and the kids and the grandkids want to go, I want to be mentally and physically able to hike and do all the things. And that image, I no joke, Joe. I was on the treadmill earlier today. That is in my head all the time when I'm wanting to stop a workout or I'm wanting to grab McDonald's, right? And I fail. I fail more than I succeed, but it's there, and that drives me. And that is to have like that deep of motivation. Like I'm not gonna fail with when it comes to that, like my health and my fitness. And I know you're aligned with that. When it comes to, you talked about six kids. I only have two, so you're 3X there. What's the age ranges?
So Bella's 15, Bear are 9 year, he's 9, Aspen is 8, Boone is 6, Ben is 2, and Booker is 1.
That is crazy.
It's a lot.
That's
It
a
is. It's a lot
lot.
of work. I think it's just part of our life. It's just we're so used to it. And my wife has her own aesthetics business too, so we're both self-employed, but she's able to work her schedule around the kids and getting them to school and this and that. And we do have a full-time sitter that's at the house, every day all week. So that's extremely helpful. But it doesn't come without struggles. It's
So I know, and I'm trying to get somewhere here with the, six kids. I know they're very active, like in the outdoors and hunting and all that stuff. And I know you travel a lot as a family during hunting season, do all that. You're growing, so like you're at a point now where you're focused and you have a big goal to go where you're at in business to the next level. And I know I've kind of hit on it a little bit already, but how are you balancing doing that with such a heavy load at home? And I'm not saying as a burden at home, but with that load that is your top priority, where do you vision the balance coming in and continuing to do things like you want? Because growing to the level you need to grow is going to demand some time and focus, right? So how do you balance that?
I really think it comes down to your schedule, my setting my schedule and having no this is my time. I do things. This is my family time. This is, being very focused, laser focused, to the point of itemizing everything I need to do each day to be successful. I haven't always been that way. And I think, coming up to the last year or so, that little bit of chaos I was able to deal with. And now it's like I need to sharpen the saw and I need to really hone in on my daily routine. And it comes down to what I need to do to be successful, what I need to do as a business owner, as a father, putting in my kids' schedules and making sure there's no, if this is my family time, this is my family time, but these 2 hours are business and that's it. Like there's no exceptions. And being very focused during that time and getting my phone calls on, getting my just my time to in the my time in the business is I'm the visionary. I'm the guy that's building relationships. I'm the guy that's doing that with the clients. So if I'm working on something else here that one of my other leadership members should be doing, that's pulling away from my time to build my business. So I've been very focused on delegating, like you said earlier, which I struggled with before because I thought I had to do everything, but now I'm very focused on delegating and whose job is what and doing my job as the owner.
The hardest part of that in delegating is all the way back to the beginning of the conversation when you talked about your confidence and your ability to get things done. When you're that confident, that that can be a hindrance as well, because you have the confidence to think, well, nobody can do it better than me. I'm just going to handle it. And then you end up handling everything, and you end up kind of getting to a point where it's too much and you're not handling any of it well, you know.
Dropping the ball.
Yeah. And I think you're one thing I struggle, and I feel like I've talked to you about this before, but one thing I struggled with for years when I was working in my corporate career was letting the job and letting the business responsibilities completely fill my calendar. And then if there were any gaps, the family gets what's left of me. What a horrible approach, right? But that's how I started that way. I built bad habits before I was married with kids, and I just kept on with that kind of grind mentality. Now, and we've been very consistent with it, but my wife and I sit down every Sunday, or at least have a conversation where we look at our calendars and say, okay, JJ's got a basketball game. Emma's got cheering this night. She's got swim. We got wrestling practice. And I'm just filling up the calendar. Wednesday night, we don't have anything. We all come home. We're going to eat a family dinner. Phone's away. That's on the calendar. I fill the calendar up with all the family stuff, and all the gaps now get my attention on business. And to your point, they're laser focused on business. Nobody's going to mess with me. I'm going to get what I need to do during that time. So when I started doing this, Joe, it was intentional, because I wanted more presence, and like, I wanted my time to be prioritized towards my family, right? But what came of it, and I didn't expect this, when I block off less time to work, right? So I say, you know, from 9 to noon today is work stuff, and I've got it figured out what I'm going to do during that time. And I know that at afternoon, I'm going to pick a kid up to go hunting for the afternoon. It made me 10 times more productive during that blocked off time, because I was not going to let that time bleed into the family stuff, right? So I feel like an idiot. The last 20 years, I haven't been like, if you force yourself to laser focus for 2 hours, you don't need 8 hours to sit around twiddling your thumbs to feel busy. You just got to lock in and laser focus. That has been a game changer for me, man. And I don't know if you kind of practice the same stuff now, but if you do, I mean, speak to that if you want. So,
yeah, I think it's, you know, for a long time, I feel like I spent a lot of time on things I couldn't control. But now, to your point, I get more done in a week in less time than I did, you know, in the past, just because of my focus is on, like you said, like this is what I got to get in. This is my time frame, and I get it done. And sometimes I can even add to that because it's more focused than I was. And I don't let things distract me during that time anymore. Like that's my time, and that's, you know, my team knows this is my zone of genius time. This is it. So yeah, you know, don't bother me until I'm done with it.
You're also, when you do it that way, it's a good way to filter out all the BS that doesn't need your attention. Because now you only got 2 hours or 4 hours or whatever you block off to get certain things done. Everything else that can wait or doesn't need your attention, it either can be delegated to someone, or you can deal with it next week's block of time, right? Helps it, anyway, for me, it helps me prioritize tasks and the responsibilities I have, just put them in the right order and deal with them in the right sequence and stuff like that. So I kind of want to wrap up on a topic that is very important to both of us. And I think, you know, I want to encourage all the listeners to listen up to this, as I do with a lot of my other guests, but it's the importance of accountability and really forcing accountability around all your priorities in life, whether that's being a good dad, being a good husband, being healthy, fit, eating right, business, all that stuff. I know you believe in forcing accountability, but speak to your mentality around that a little bit.
Oh, man, I've always been accountable to myself for a long time, and I've done a really good job not letting myself down. But I really, recently, I've really brought it to the next level and, you know, got into some accountability groups, and you're in one of them. And it just keeps me so much more laser focused on the habits, the new habits that I'm trying to create in my life to get me to the next level. And I just, it's just a game changer for me. You know, the accountability that I have, because I don't want to let nobody down. I'm like you.
Right.
You ain't letting nobody down. Right. You're gonna be on the treadmill until midnight to make sure you didn't let that person down.
Right.
And it's the same way with our kids and our family. But I think, you know, people, it's too easy for people to not be accountable for something nowadays, you know, and it's too easy for people to quit things. And it's just not the mentality that me or you have. And I think that's what draws people like us together, is that driving force of,
yeah,
hey, we're here to be better, and we're here to change, you know, do a paradigm shift in what's out there and what kind of parents, you know, what parents are doing nowadays.
Yeah. Yeah. And I went through a period several years where, you know, like my accountability as a younger human was through sports, and you don't want to let your teammates down, don't want to let your coaches down, don't want to let yourself down. So that was kind of built in accountability. But as I got off on my own and building in my career, I've always been fairly self-disciplined, and to your point, like holding myself accountable. But when I got away from that forced accountability, right? I was in a sales job. I had numbers to meet. They were easy to meet. I always exceeded them. So that wasn't, you know, anything that was that challenging to me. But when it came to like health and fitness, I just completely let go of any accountability for myself or anybody else around me for, I don't know, probably 6 or 8 years. And I gained a lot of weight, started getting the dad bod, all that stuff. And it took really seeing a picture of myself, you know, more than anything else, but realizing like,
absolutely,
what the hell are you doing? And then I got back on the train and have been for a while. But for me, it's creating these little micro challenges, these accountability groups like you and I are in, where we kind of each week have to say what we've done or what we haven't done, things like that. The ultimate motivator for me outside of my family is not letting people down. And when I force an environment where if I don't do what I've committed to doing, or at least do it to the best of my ability, with some failures along the way, but if I don't do that, then I'm letting the people down that I have to send this to every week. And if I consistently don't do a good job, then that's going to demotivate them to do a good job. So now the whole thing busts. And for me, creating that and having that constant accountability around my health and fitness, my business, my family, my time, all of that, I don't know that I'd be half of what I'm able to do now and who I am now without it. So,
yeah. I think it's super important in everybody's life. And it's been a huge game changer in my business, because we, you know, I have people that hold me accountable as the owner. And, you know, weekly we meet to make sure that I'm hitting, doing things that I need to be doing.
Right.
And it's huge. It's huge for our success. It's easy to, like I said before, it's easy to fall asleep and lie.
People have to seek it out, though. They can't just talk about it. They can't just say, oh, I'm accountable to my kids or whatever. No, no. Put something in place for me. This year in particular, I've taken it one more step for myself in forcing accountability through publicly sharing some of my big goals, right? Yeah. That's hard for me to do because some of these goals are so big. I'm scared myself. They make me nervous. I don't know if I can hit them. But if I publicly share them, I guarantee I'm going to be closer than I would have if I didn't, because they're easier to run away from. I had somebody yesterday. I was at a local store, and I walked in, and they had seen me post about how much loans we want to make the first quarter in our business. I didn't even know I was friends with this person on social media. And they said, how you doing with that goal? And I'm like, oh, okay. So I don't want to let these people down, right? So I got to work harder. So
there's more people watching than you think
right.
There is.
Yep, that's right. So, but yeah, I kind of want to make one last point on this about the accountability piece. It's, you know, whether it is a group of friends that are close to you, or whether it's a group that you seek out, a bigger group, and you pay to be a member of that group, like we do with the Dad Edge and other things that we're a part of, just find some type of community to lean in on, and that it pays dividends. I'll wrap up with one fun topic for a few minutes, because both of us are passionate about hunting, specifically deer hunting. You're in Wisconsin. we could talk hunting for another few days, but I want to ask you a question because we both have kids that are doing it now. Describe the feeling of watching one of your children have success out there in the hunting woods.
Dude, I don't know if you can describe that, honestly. I really don't. My six-year-old shot a nice 10-point buck this year.
Yep.
And I sent you pictures, and I videoed the whole thing. And the best part about the hunt was when I turned after he shot it, and he just goes like this, and he goes, "I'm so proud of myself."
Oh, not and awesome, like, man.
Dude, that, I don't care about anything else. You just saying that made the whole hunt. And I got it all on video. I'm like,
oh,
it's just those special moments that, yeah, you know, as a hunter, I don't know if, you know, some people don't like it. Some people do. I don't do it for the kill.
Yeah.
I don't do it for the kill. That is a bonus part of it.
Right.
But the experience that I have, you know, by myself sometimes, but most of the time with my children, with my wife, you can't explain it. Honestly, it's something that those memories that I'll go to my grave with, and we'll talk about for years. Every time we're at a family dinner, we talk about it. So it's very special.
It is, man. And it's probably the most special thing in my life. Like the part of the most special thing in my life is getting them outdoors. And I've shared this, like, this year in particular. So we journal every hunt. You know, the kids keep their own journals. I've done that since I was a kid. And but this year in particular, we spent, I never touched a weapon this year. Not one. Now, during turkey season, I did. I killed a few turkeys. But during deer season, first time in my life since I started hunting at 6 years old that I didn't touch a weapon. Didn't, you know. But we spent 232 hours in either a tree stand or a blind, one-on-one with my kids. Like, that is a ton of time, right? And the outdoors gives me that opportunity. We're fortunate to have good land to hunt, some big deer, so we have some success. But even if we hadn't seen a deer, just that time spent with my 8-year-old and my 13-year-old, like, that, you talk about memories and laughs and, you know, all that good stuff. There's nothing. Now, I couldn't spend that much time if I didn't design a life that allows me to do it, right? You know, there's been years where I might spend 15 hours in the woods, you know, because, and that's it for the whole season. But it's so, and then when they do have success, to see the shaking and hear the heavy breathing, it's, and the rush I get, and I've killed a ton of big deer, and I get a rush on every one, but that rush of even watching my little son kill a doe, there's nothing that compares to that rush, that adrenaline rush, man. So,
yeah. And I think it goes to your character, you know, the changes you've made in your life, Jason, to be able to do that and to know how important that is. I don't know if people know how important that time is, you know? I just don't.
Well, I feel it and I know it, and so do you, it sounds like, because I didn't have it, right? And I craved it when I was a kid. Like, I got to hunt a lot because there were some very good men and, you know, that were close to me that were able to get me out there. But it wasn't my dad, right? I didn't get to spend time in a stand with my dad. And that 43 now, that still makes me sad that I didn't get to do that. My kids are not going to say that. They're not going to say that, you know? And my daughter all the time said, "Dad, because she's getting to an age where she can start sitting on her own. She's like, "I don't want to sit on my own." Yeah. And I was like, "All right, baby, at some point I want to hunt again." So, but I love it, man. I love every bit of it. So, Joe,
that's good.
I appreciate you, brother, man. You continue to inspire me. You know, I mean, like we talked about, we're in separate little accountability groups and stuff like that. And the more I get to know you, the more aligned I am. I realize I am with your values and everything you're doing. So, and to take the time, I mean, you just kind of laid it out. You're busy. Like, you don't have time for this, right? But you made time for it. And I really appreciate it. And I'm grateful that you came on here, man.
Yeah, that feeling's mutual. And I appreciate you having me on here. I love sharing my story and I love being a part of something so special here.
Yeah. So what, as far as your business goes, Joe, now do you guys have a social media presence or anything like that where I can share a link in the notes so people can check out what you're doing?
Yeah, we do. It'd be elitecutover.com.
Okay. Yep.
And I'm not sure what our Facebook page is. I don't handle that, but
I'll find it.
Yeah.
But we'll share all that. And you're nationwide, so I mean, I don't know what your avatar of a client is, but I mean, if you want to take a few seconds to share that, so somebody, you know, that's listening might have a need for your services.
Yeah. Yeah. We work for local telcos. We work for electric co-ops, municipalities, anybody doing any kind of fiber work. We do it all. So.
And there's a way to contact through your website, I would imagine,
yep.
Right?
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Deal. Well, Joe, man, I really appreciate it. I'm sitting here remembering some things I wanted to talk about, but I don't want to drag it on. Like,
is that right?
You had a deer farm at one point where you were growing giant deer. So love to get into that, but we'll maybe catch up later this year on stuff like that. So
sounds good.
But I appreciate you, man. I hope you have a good rest of your week, and we'll talk soon.
All right. Appreciate you.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Burning the Ships. I want to give a special thanks to our sponsor, 608B Capital, helping real estate investors secure fast, reliable funding to fuel their boldest moves. If you're ready to take your investing to the next level, visit 608bcapital.com to learn more. If you found value in today's episode, please take a moment to rate and review the podcast. Your feedback not only helps us improve, but it also helps us reach more people who are ready to burn the ships and commit fully to their goals. And don't forget to share the episode with someone who needs that extra push to take bold action. I'll leave you with this. Burning the ships isn't just about removing the option to retreat. It's about unlocking the courage to charge forward. No matter the odds, the past is behind you and the future is yours to conquer. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time on Burning the Ships.